Welcome to Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Author and attorney Roberta Grimes will explore and illustrate how she, after an extraordinary experience of light in childhood, has discovered channels of communication to the afterlife and how these implications have an effect on our everyday lives. Please welcome the host of Seek Reality, Roberta Grimes.
Oh, everyone, I'm so glad you're with us today. This is Roberta Grimes. Of course, this is Seek Reality, and we're going to have a lot of fun with a topic that I think will lift a lot of hearts. One of the things I love about studying the afterlife is that it's such a wonderful, gigantic puzzle. And there are a lot of careful researchers now who are working on the details of it, because we have the whole structure, I think, pretty much worked out as much as we can understand it. And it's important to be skeptical as we fill it in, because we don't want to add anything to this consistent picture that we're all finding that's not true. And yet new things keep turning up. And one of the hard to believe new details that I'm coming to understand actually are true is the fact that a good marriage can carry on after one partner has died. I mean, literally, it's almost as if they tell me there was no death, believe it or not. I don't know whether this has always been going on, and maybe just widows and widowers didn't talk about it, but it's also possible that this is one of the things that's happening as the people we used to think were dead tell us that the veil is thinning between dimensions. So it may be this is one of the joyous fruits of the fact that we are very soon going to be in very good communication, and the widows and widowers have already discovered it. The first widow who ever told me these stories was Dr. Jamie Turndorf, and her wonderful book about her ongoing relationship with her deceased husband. I think he's been dead 10 years now, and his name is Jean Pen. But her account of how they've just kept on as if nothing had happened is called Love Never Dies, and it really proves that that's true. I'll occasionally have share a breakfast or a lunch with her, and we always have three people at the table. Jean is always there and always talking to us, so it's kind of amazing. If you have never read Love Never Dies, now would be a good time to do it if you're interested in this field. In fact, Jamie is a wonderful spiritual teacher. She's going to be with us again in just a few weeks. And about a year ago, I noticed that this was a broad phenomenon. I run afterlifeforums.com, which is a place for people to talk about all these topics. And there started to be posts there from women, especially, and I think one or two men, who are in the same contact with their deceased spouses they would be when they both got up for breakfast and shared breakfast at the table. It was amazing. So I would just sort of jump in and say, oh, wait a minute, that's not, I don't think. And they all both told me I was an old fuddy-duddy. And they told me they even sometimes have sex with their dead relative, their dead loved one. So I said, all right, I finally decided it had to be true. They convinced me of it. And now, as you know, I'm a member of the board of the Afterlife Research and Education Institute, AREI, and AREI is doing Zoom groups where people can talk about whatever topic interests them. And the leader of one of those Zoom groups is our guest today. His name is William J. Murray. He says we can call him Bill. And his book is only 40 pages long. I thought when I saw it, 40 pages, what could be in it? You would not believe what's in it. It's called Love After Life: How I Defeated Grief and Kept My Relationship with My Soulmate Strong and Joyful After She Passed from the Physical. Kind of a mouthful, but just think of it as Love After Life. It's available on Amazon. And believe me, 40 pages is what all books should be from now on. After I read that book, that's what I sort of think. I'm so glad you're with us, Bill. Welcome.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This is great.
Please tell people a little bit about your background, just briefly, so that they'll know who they're talking with.
I come from several different spiritual philosophies. I've been through several in my life, so I've accumulated a lot of information that way. I had a couple of philosophy books published in the mid-90s. Basically, my occupation now is I'm sort of a creative director for a company down in Austin, Texas. And my wife passed away in April of last year, and we had been together very happily married for 27 years. Before that, we referred to ourselves as soulmates or twin flames, however you want to phrase that. And I add that to let people know this was this was no casual relationship. We are very deeply in love.
So, well, that's obvious when you read your book. It's amazing. But so you had been married before, right? Or am I mixing you with someone else?
No, I both my wife and I had two marriages before we met.
So you just knew there was somebody out there who was perfect, and it turned out to be right.
Well, I'll tell you the truth. I had basically given up on love. I thought it was basically just a commercial, you know, a manufactured commercial idea, deep love, true love, that type of stuff. I had pretty much given up on it. And she was pretty disillusioned. She had basically said she was never going to get married again. And she was pretty disillusioned. And 5 days after we met, we were making plans on getting married.
5 days. It took almost a week.
Right.
That's a wonderful story. But I think it resonates probably with a lot of people. When you find the person that you, between you and me, frankly, everybody, we plan all of this. That was all spiritual lessons for the two of them. And they planned also coming together. Life planning is something we're going to be talking about more, because many people don't understand it and understand why it's important. But it's just a beautiful story. You finally found one another. And you each had children, right, from previous marriages?
Yes, she had three children. I had three children. And we ended up, we don't even, you know, call our children stepchildren or anything like that. That we all, you know, we're basically one big happy family.
And 25 years is a good long marriage, although, of course, it's never long enough. So did you know, she was ill, right? She had cancer, I think?
Right. She fought cancer for about 2.5 years before she crossed over.
What kind of cancer was it?
Well, she had before I met her, that's kind of an interesting story. Before I met her, she had already gone through breast cancer. She had double radical mastectomy, and they told her she had like 6 months to live unless she went entirely through chemo. And this is chemo back in the day when chemo was really, really bad. And so she was, she took one treatment, and she knew that was going to kill her if she kept taking that treatment.
Yeah, I know. I have a friend like that too. Yes.
Yeah. And so she went to a faith healer, and it immediately went into remission after the faith healer. And that lasted. What we didn't know is that a lot of people have a recurrence of breast cancer, even if they've had, you know, most of their breast or all of it removed, it still can recur. And so it came back about, you know, 25 years later. And you know, then she started the modern chemo, which is a lot better than the old chemo.
Yeah. This is something which I think everybody needs to understand. If you have a spouse who's going through a very serious illness, it's great if you can begin to talk and plan about what comes next, because we all know someone is going to go first. I've been married 45 years. We still know someone is going to go first. It's good to talk, if you can, about the fact that love is eternal and that life is eternal, and begin to learn what comes next. Because the people who are, don't you think, the people who are most grief-stricken are the people who are clueless about the fact that their loved one is just fine. So you knew a lot, right, when this all started? You knew a lot.
Actually, I mean, we had been, that was one of the great things about our relationship. We were like to stay up late talking about life, talking about the universe, philosophy. And like I said, I had a long background in philosophy. I had always believed in the afterlife. I mean, from when I was a little boy, I'd always believed in it. And she had a complete firm faith in the afterlife. Now, we didn't have any idea that all this evidence existed for the afterlife. But we had talked about, I mean, she liked shows, medium shows. We used to watch shows on TV about mediums. She would ring Lob saying Rampa, and then the Abraham Hicks material. And so we had an agreement that whoever left first, of course, would stay, of course, and comfort everybody they could, and keep the relationship with whoever was left behind, try to keep it as active as possible. So we had that agreement going in. And then, as you say, the 2.5 years, I consider that part of the process that was preparing me. You talk about life planning. I go back to my childhood. And it was like I realized that everything that I had been through, all the spiritual doctrines, all the life's up and downs, the two marriages, had prepared me for this. And so I'm very grateful that I was, I guess in a previous life, I prepared myself and planned this out, because it worked out very well.
Well, it worked out well because you followed the plan. Now, we all have guidance from our spirit guides. When
yes.
Our bodies sleep, our minds don't have to sleep, so we'll often visit with them. So he was getting guidance, and he was meeting with her then, and with her guides too. They were all talking about this. This doesn't happen casually or lightly. And I think, having read your book, that one of the things the two of you planned was this exact course of events, that as the veil thins, you were going to be one of the people who would help people understand how, what the right way is to deal with grief. I mean, you can either be miserable for the rest of your entire life, and I know people like that. Don't ever tell them that there's anything that could happen other than the fact that their loved one died. Or you can do what you did, Bill. What you and Irene have done is absolutely beautiful. But this book describes the grief-eliminating and trans-dimensional relationship-building process I found and developed through my personal experience. Grief-eliminating and trans-dimensional relationship-building is a whole new term. I've never heard anybody think about it that way, but that's exactly what it is. He says, this book is for those that share an eternal commitment to their departed loved one and choose not to move on, but rather choose to embrace a transdimensional relationship as best they can until fully reunited with their soulmate. And of course, that's going to happen in the future. Perfect. That's beautiful, Bill. Now, when she was coming toward death, you, of course, were very upset about all of this, but were you talking with her about what comes next?
Well, we had basically, talked all that out. Irene and I were completely and totally fulfilled while here on Earth. And that's something about the particular nature of the bond of this type of relationship, is we were already reading each other's thoughts, basically, and knowing what each other needed before anybody had to say it. We had said everything to each other we needed to say, long before this came. But as it got closer and closer, it was more about giving our other, her children, our children, and other relatives the chance to get with them, because we knew what we were going to do. I mean, we had that all figured out.
And so how did her death actually happen? Were you there? Was she in a hospital? How did that happen?
As is so often the case in these things, is it just seemed planned out. We were having a big family get together type barbecue thing here at the house. And then everybody was over, and she started feeling, she was having difficulty breathing this whole time. So she started having more difficulty breathing. So we had to call an ambulance, and I rode with her to the hospital. And then again, as is so often the case, she had like a recovery in the hospital, where everybody got to talk and laugh and play and have a good time with her. And then as that wound down and people started leaving, she kind of lapsed into being non-communicative, and she had set up, or our soul teams had set up, I feel like it was her, during this whole time, of a very profound chain of events that was basically very comforting to everybody, had everybody here arranged in an exact way, and the time that she died and where everybody was in relationship to that as everybody needed it. Like, one of the things was that our oldest son, Robert, she felt that he needed to be there and needed to experience the pastor coming in. As soon as the pastor said his prayer and said, you can, we are all here. I wasn't there at the time. I had come home, but she had something else planned for me. As soon as he said, we're all here, you can go home, she took one breath and she was gone. And so that really comforted our son, because he wanted to see that it was a choice, that she was there and that she had chosen to leave at that time.
What a blessing. That's wonderful. Yes. So what happened with you? You weren't there. What happened?
Well, I mean, that was the thing between my wife and I, is that we were so, you know, confident in each other. But she had set up this whole thing before where about a week before she crossed over, I had a button come off my vest. And this is just one of the things. I had a button come off my vest. And so I asked her to sew it back on. So she sewed it back on. And I looked at it and I put it in the closet. And so I'd come home just to, you know, everybody else was there. I'd come home to just basically shower, feed the dogs, and maybe get a little bit of sleep and come back, because it wasn't that, I mean, we both did. It wasn't that important for me to be there. It was that important for other people to be there. And my son called me up and said, "Dad, she's, mom's gone." And so I said, "Okay, I'll be there in just a minute." And so I went in and I pulled out my vest and I start to button it, and the button that she had sewed on just came off in my hand without any thread or anything, like it had been balanced on the vest. And I just had that immediate sensation that, you know, that happiness that she was there. And I said, "That's a good one, babe." And so I just laughed, and then I went on up to the hospital.
So when did you start to feel, now obviously you felt she was there, right there with you. You felt her there.
Absolutely.
But everyone, please understand, we have you know, that sense of a presence, someone's behind you and you don't hear them, but you feel them. That is reported all the time by people who have just lost a loved one. The loved one's right there. So don't say it, think it's your imagination. It's real. But now, did she speak to you, or how did she communicate with you more closely?
Well, the besides all the signs, now when my wife crossed over, for about 2 weeks, starting at that time, I felt with this hand on my heart, and I knew that I was being, I felt like, okay, I'm either in shock, or she is protecting me, and I felt that it was her. She's protecting me from grief, from pain. And for the duration of those 2 weeks, I felt so close to her. I was talking to her. I could feel her presence. She touched me with the most unbelievable, indescribable sensation, physical and emotional sensation I've ever experienced in my life.
Wow.
And I started thinking, and we were having a good time. I mean, as I was doing the kind of things you have to do after your wife dies, getting a death certificate and all that type of stuff, we were driving around and having a good time. We were laughing, and you know, you hear a voice in your head that's it's like you talking to yourself, but it carries with it this emotional impact. And I felt great for 2 weeks, and then the grief hit. So that 2 weeks basically gave me something to think about and hold on to as I worked through the grief.
You say something else, which I think is true, and I've never heard anyone else say it. You say grief is addiction withdrawal, right?
Yeah, that's how I came to understand grief is that it's, I don't care who you are, let's say 99.9% of the time, I don't care who you are, or your belief in the afterlife, how solid it is, that when it's like being addicted to the most wonderful drug for 27 years. And when you go cold turkey off of that, basically that physical presence, that physical and psychological presence of them being there, you can see them, feel them, touch them. It's going to hurt. You're going to go into withdrawal. And the reason I characterize it like that in my mind is that, one, I thought it was true, but number two, it gave me this hope that if I just outlast that withdrawal, like somebody going through a chemical withdrawal, that I would get to the other side of it.
I think that that's a very important point, because grief is very complicated. Basic grief, I've become confident about, is always something that you get over. The first stage of it, and a lot of it within a year. It just always, you get over it. If it continues beyond a year in that raw sense, then either you are willfully continuing it. That's the only way you can hold on to your spouse, or it's complicated usually by guilt, but by some negative emotions that can make grief, frankly, last the rest of your life. But what you did was just get through it. Sometimes you stayed in bed all day. You clearly were doing what you had to do to get rid of that addiction.
Right. I mean, that's what I describe in the book. There's a process of just trial and error. I mean, I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist or trained in any way like that. Just, we had a long history of affirmations and doing intentions and visualizations, that type of thing. And so just using those techniques day after day, even if I was crying, even if I was just basically kneeling beside the bed sobbing, if I couldn't go to sleep at night because I was having a panic attack, I would just keep doing those things as best I could, with the hope that at some point in time I would outlast the grief. And what you said is very true about holding on. Is it's my view that inside that grief, or separate from it, there is a connection sensation that triggers grief because we don't know what it is. We don't know how to isolate it from the grief. And so the reason, in my view, that a lot of people subconsciously or unconsciously hold on to that pain is they're mistaking their grief for the connection. And what I'm saying is that you can let go of the grief, but still have the connection. And properly understanding that connection and how it can trigger emotions, but it's not those emotions. It's something much better. If you can isolate that by focusing on it, you'll come into this wonderful sensation and feeling of them being there.
This is another great point. What Bill is saying really is that if you have a good spiritual relationship with your spouse during life, then you're going to have to interrupt it to get rid of the addiction to having that person here beside you. But there is something beautiful that comes after, and you built that wonderful base of spirituality and of understanding what actually is going on while you were together, so that you can go right back to that relationship. So when we ended our last segment, you were deep in grief, sometimes couldn't even get out of bed. Now, how did that begin to lift?
Well, I would have, I would experience times, sometimes it was just a few minutes, sometimes it would be a whole day or 2 days of feeling really good and feeling that connection and feeling really happy and joyful and just kidding around and having fun. And then I would, just at the drop of the hat, people who go through this know what I'm talking about, just at the drop of a hat, just plunge back into grief, and that would cause me to doubt everything that had happened before. You know, I think you must have been crazy if you thought you were feeling good, because there's no way out of this. There's no light at the end of the tunnel. There's no way out of this. Everything hurts. And then I would wake up the next day, probably from a night of being with her in the astral, but I would wake up the next day and I'd feel great. And this kind of bouncing back and forth occurred for a couple of months. But after 4 months, after 5 months, I kept a journal and then I turned that into a blog, I realized, what was the last time I actually felt the grief? Now, I want to make a distinction here between grief and regular sorrow and regular longing. Grief is like a wild, and people know this, it's like a wild animal that's just tearing you up from the inside. It's turning everything dark. It's making everything painful. It affects your mind. It affects the way you think. Whereas regular sorrow, I mean, we feel that regardless of whether or not somebody has crossed over. We can feel sorrow and longing for somebody. I used to feel that she would visit and babysit for a week at a time at her son's house. And she'd be gone for a week, and I would feel the same thing, the longing and the sorrow that she wasn't there. So while I would still feel that from time to time, I realized I hadn't experienced the grief. So after about 4 months, and I didn't realize it until 5 months later, but after about 4 months, I experienced no grief at all, and I still have had no recurrences of it since.
Isn't that interesting? This is like a clinical study, because most people just are not as self-aware and careful about recording things as you've been. But I've dealt with a lot of grieving widows, counseled them, had them mad at me because I thought there could ever be a future, all kinds of things with grieving, especially widows. And I think what you say is true. If it's uncomplicated grief, after a few months, that addiction has worn off and the new relationship has begun. And with you, it seems to have been pretty seamless. Now, you say that she was babysitting at your son's house. Did anyone there see or experience her?
No, I meant by that is that in while she was here, she would babysit at our.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So right. You experienced her being away from you the way you had experienced it when he was alive, which was alive. I get it. Okay. Right. And did she ever tell you what she was doing? Because you seem to have learned a lot from her about what her life is there.
Oh, well, definitely. She's taking care of, I mean, that was one of the things that she really disliked about her illness was that it basically kept her from doing what she wanted to do, which was take care of the kids, even though they're adults, the grandkids, the great grandkid, taking care of me. And so what she's doing over there right now is she's largely focused on that, but she's doing what we had always planned to do, and that is build our existence there. This is what we're both doing together now, is we are focused on building our existence there. So it's gone from, we did the same thing here. We created our life here, and so now we're doing it over there.
So, I mean, you talk about imagining you're in all these places with her. Do you sense that she's actually there?
Oh, absolutely. She's confirmed to me several times, to the point to where I've largely stopped asking for confirmations. But she does it every now and then anyway, just to, you know, give me a little jolt or to give me a little push or a that great sensation of connection, of, you know, even more connection. But yes, that's one of the things that I focus on in the book is visualization. And that is to set aside your doubts and to set aside your fears about whether or not you're, you know, a lot of people fear and doubt that they're making stuff up in their head. And what's one of the things I cover in the book is, if that's a problem, ask for confirmation. And she did that several times. Imagining our home over there, imagining what we're going to do over there, going to just, I mean, it's trivial little stuff, but that would make us so happy here. I mean, if we were just watching TV or going out to eat out or, if, you know, we envision going to the beach over there and just having fun, both of us perfectly healthy, both of us having a great time. And the reason I started doing visualizing us over there instead of here was to avoid the pain of remembering us, our time together here. Now, right. I can do that now without any pain, but it's essential that you focus on something that gives you happiness and joy to bring that connection into focus.
One of the things that Bill says in his book is that, well, everybody, every healthy couple that wants to maintain a relationship should right now be learning all that you can about the afterlife. I mean, you're aware that I write about it. The Fun of Dying is all about that. But there are other great writers, too, and he mentions some of them in his book. And the other thing he says you should do is be positive. This is so important because the higher your own personal spiritual vibration is, and he says this right in his book, and it's true, the higher your vibration is, the closer you're going to be to your loved one who's now in spirit, and the easier it will be for you to constantly be in contact the way they are. Basically, your life hasn't changed that much. You're checking in with her all day long, and she's checking in with you, and you probably watch TV together and go out to dinner together, all the things you used to do. That's so amazing. But yes. It's because you've kept your energy high, Bill. That is so important.
And it's very difficult to do when you're going through grief. And that's one of the reasons you have to have a way of understanding, like the addiction scenario, the withdrawal scenario, a way of contextualizing or framing this in your mind that gives you an avenue to go forward and to have the hope. The afterlife information is great for doing that, and a means of thinking about your relationship in a very positive way. And when you're thinking about you being together in an unlimited afterlife without any of the problems that exist in this particular world, of being able to do whatever you want together in this vast adventure of the afterlife, that very quickly becomes something very positive, very thrilling, and very happy and joyful to imagine.
It becomes a self-reinforcing positive cycle, which is a very good thing, and which unfortunately is not what most widows and widowers do, at least for a time. They're in a self-reinforcing negative cycle and make themselves feel worse. So you're a very brave man, I have to say. But what you're leading the way for so many other people who don't want to spend the rest of their lives miserable, you're certainly not doing that. You weren't psychic before, though, were you? I mean, you're not someone, people shouldn't listen and think, oh, it was easy for him, I could never do it, right?
No, this was all accomplished without any type of what I call esoteric practices, like going to a medium or being psychic or having a near-death experience. This is just stuff in my book explains my very normal way of going about it. I mean, a lot of the things that I talk about in the book are actually, I've come to find out later, common practices in psychotherapy. And that is the visualization of the positive aspects. They say that your brain and your subconscious don't know the difference between reality, what you experience, and what you imagine and visualize. So when you're imagining and visualizing your loved one in a very positive, happy scenario, that starts imprinting on you. This is their explanation of it. That starts imprinting on you to react differently and to feel differently when you think of them. You know, from my perspective, it's you're getting closer and closer in tune with them, and you can feel psychically that connection, and so that pain starts to go away, and you just start feeling the positive experience of them being with you.
One of the things that I think is very important is that you, before the death, you all are comfortable with what is coming next. A couple of years ago, I got a call from a phone call from a woman who was helping her husband die. And she said he was very, very ill and had been for a long time. And she said that what was lighting the last days of his life was that every night she would come to the hospital and read to him, believe it or not, from The Fun of Dying, so he could look forward to what was coming next. He hadn't known. And she said he's all excited now about what's about to happen. I thought that was about the strangest call I'd ever gotten. But when I got an email from her a few days later, she said her husband had died at peace because he had stopped focusing on I'm dying and started to focus on, wow, I'm about to begin to really live. And that's another thing people can do if your loved one is not familiar with what's going on. Didn't happen for me, though. I didn't hear from my mother that I was right until after she had died. She said, oh, my goodness, you were right all along, but she thought it to the end. So we're all different. We have to help our loved ones however we can. This is a universal transition. We all make it. And you don't have to make it fearfully. Knowing that we're all going, you can make it actually a positive a part of a long-term eternal relationship with the people you love the most, not just your spouses, but siblings, parents, all your loved ones. The reunions over there are glorious. Bill is trying to help other people to do what he is doing, which I think is really beautiful, Bill. Thank you for that. As you know, I'm on the board of the Afterlife Research and Education Institute, AREI, and also on the board is my wonderful, wonderful friend, Wendy Zammit. And Wendy was the one who said, you have to have Bill on because he is just a powerhouse in this field. And so tell us a little bit about what you're doing to help other people come to understand that they can continue their relationships with their beloved spouses.
Well, besides the blog and the book, in a group on Facebook called Forever in Love with our partners who have crossed over. And we don't hold normal Facebook groups yet. We may do that for you know, whoever, you know, like groups of people, 10 or 12 people, because this can be a very raw experience. Some people are very raw and they're in a lot of pain. And what I've found is it's better for me to interact with these people on a one-on-one basis so they can feel a little bit freer about expressing that.
That's beautiful. I'm so glad you're doing that. It must take a lot of time and a lot of love for you to be doing that to help people.
Well, I've talked to a few people, and it seems to have helped them. I'm very grateful to be in the position where I can offer that type of help to people.
One of the things I'm wondering is, what if people, someone has lost a spouse last year, 2-3 years ago, and it never occurred to them, they're starting to feel less in grief, but it never occurred to them they could keep the relationship going. Do you have advice for them?
Well, yeah, advice. This is a commitment. I mean, people have to make a decision or understand that this is a commitment. You don't just wait for the people on the other side to contact you. This is a two-way communication. They are thrilled. You know, Irene is thrilled to be able to interact with me. Our loved ones are thrilled to be able to interact with us. But it's a two-way street. You can't just be, you know, in my opinion, you can't just be submissive and expect them to do all the work. We right. have work we have to do on our side to be able to feel that connection, to empower that connection, and to build on that connection. So if it's something that somebody really wants to do, like for me, I knew I couldn't continue without a relationship with her. So there was basically no choice. You know, that's something I've always wanted to do. It's something we agreed to do. But, you know, I knew that I had to have her in my life. So if that's their particular situation, then there is a way forward. There is a way to go forward and empower that relationship.
I'd just like to introduce a little experience of mine as well. On Afterlife forums, there is someone whose wife was in the physical when he joined the forum, but she was dying. And after she died, she was a medium. She had been very, very spiritual. And after she died, she had a wonderful relationship with her husband, it was wonderful to watch him brighten when he realized that could continue. But he now has a girlfriend, and he says that she doesn't mind that at all. And that's what we hear from a lot of people. So if you're listening and saying, I would love to stay in touch with my wife, but I'm young, I really want to have a close relationship with someone in the physical, you can have them both. I've never heard of a case where a spouse who's gone ahead has felt any jealousy at all. It does not seem to happen. Instead, the great thing about love is it's infinite. So you don't have to limit yourself to one person, or you can. It's totally up to you how you handle this time. And there is no right answer. But only know that since love is all there really is, it's up to you how you do it. But you said the biggest problem people have is when things happen that really are communications, they just write it off.
Right. I mean, that's part of the doubt or the fear. And they're always looking to somebody else. I say always. They are often looking to somebody else to verify for them that it happened. And in my book and in my experience, it's when you have that intuition, I wonder if that was them. That's really that's your spirit saying it's them. And then your mind covers that up with fear and doubt. So just accept that it's them, validate that it's them, tell them, I hear you, I am talking, you know, and that empowers that relationship, that moves you closer in focus with them.
That is such an important point. Right. Of course, my book on signs from the dead and communicating with the dead is The Fun of Staying in Touch. And one of the things that the dead tell us is, even if you think it's, I've heard that same song 3 times in the past 2 days, and we danced to it at our wedding. I wonder if that's a sign. Just say thank you for that sign. Please do something else, or please do it again. Because speaking aloud, we are told, as you just said, so much is true that's in your book. I didn't realize you had so much knowledge, but you have a great deal. Speaking aloud empowers them. So what we want to do is everything we can to encourage them.
Absolutely. Do everything you can. I mean, I set coffee out on the table every day since she crossed over. And she actually draws a flower with the milk and the coffee every day. every single day. And I even conducted an experiment once. And this is what people can do to get confirmation. Is I told her, you know, if you don't want to draw that flower anymore, that's fine. I'm okay. And then 2 days, the flower didn't show up. And so I said, I think I was a little hasty in that. Would you please start drawing that flower again? And it appeared the next day and ever since.
That is amazing. I understand that is what happens. And that's something that you all can do as well. You can say, please turn that off, and then please turn it on again. For me, it happened with electric lights. It was astonishing.
Yes.
But this book I recommend to everyone. I mean, this is many books you feel like they're a lifetime commitment. This is a book that's 40 pages long. And in those 40 pages, it packs, you know, hundreds of pages of information in a very quick place. People who need it probably don't want to make a long commitment to a book. It's called Love After Life. And it includes a lot of links. It's available on Amazon. And the author is William Jane Murray. And I really think anybody who cares at all about keeping the relationship going with a loved one who is or is about to die, it needs to read Love After Life by William Jane Murray. Thank you so much for being with us. I feel as if you're an old friend. I hope that I'll get to hug you for real for soon. But meanwhile, please accept my virtual hug, Bill.
I'm hugging you back. I really do appreciate this, Roberta. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Now, everyone, as you know, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Never forget that you are a powerful, eternal being. You never began, you never will end. When you really get what that means in your life, it's going to change everything for the better. Next week, your guest will again be your host. A couple of listeners recently separately asked me to please do a program on reincarnation. And if they feel the need to know more about reincarnation, then my hunch is everybody probably would like to hear a little more about it. Since I was a Christian for most of my life into my 50s, that really was a foreign concept to me. But the evidence is so abundant and consistent that all of us live lots of lifetimes that I've learned rather late in life why it fits and all the evidence. And it all makes sense. And even Jesus talked about it. They just tried to cut it out of the Gospels, but they didn't take everything. I'm kind of liking reincarnation now, and the way it actually happens is so boggling that I think we probably should talk about it. Please join us next week. This week, we've been speaking with William Murray, who's a leader in the new ranks of widows and widowers who are continuing their relationships with their deceased spouses as if those spouses were still alive. Truly and always, as Dr. Jamie Turndorf tells us in her wonderful book, Love Never Dies, love never does die. Doesn't have to. In fact, it can get even stronger after death. Bill's brief little book is Love After Life, and it can be found on Amazon. I really urge you to read it if you have any interest at all, because when you really need this information, it will be infinitely precious to you, and it can make all the difference in the rest of your own life. He kept a journal, so this really amounts to almost a how-to book for people who have been separated from a spouse temporarily by death and want to still keep that relationship strong. Frankly, when our choice is between being sad for the rest of our lives or instead beginning to build a new relationship that keeps our spouse so central to our lives that happiness still is possible for us, and that hug that's coming up soon is going to be wonderful. When that's the choice, I think the choice William made has to be the right choice for all of us. Let's keep our marriages going if they're important to us. Now, as you know, my nonfiction books are Liberating Jesus, My Thomas, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, The Fun of Growing Forever, The Fun of Living Together, and for young children, The Fun of Meeting Jesus. If you want to talk about any of my books, or if you just want to say, you know, hello, or ask a question, just go to robertagrimes.com and ask through the contact link there. If you want to hear past episodes of Seek Reality, they're available on webtalkradio.net, iTunes, and through the Seek Reality app you can find for free in the iTunes store. Meanwhile, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Please don't for a moment forget that you are a powerful, eternal being, and please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in what is truly only one reality, just a beautiful, gorgeous one. And always know that you are a powerful, eternal being, and you are infinitely loved.